To introduce you to our first speaker, his name is Azeem F. from the New York City area, and the topic, Hell Has an Exit.
Hi fam, I'm an addict named Azeem. I'd like to praise the God of my understanding for the breath of life that he's given me today, for me being clean today, for guiding me to the rooms in the Narcotics Anonymous, and for the men and women in fellowship. You know, I'd like to thank the convention committee, the program committee, for giving me the opportunity to be responsible for my recovery. They gave me this little thing here. I'm trying to get it on, but I guess I just opened it up. They're giving out these tags that you reach into the bag and you pull it out, and I pulled out this one that says service. So I figured I would put it on. Or not. So much for that. All right. I'm from New York City. My home group is Steps and Traditions in El Barrio. Right, we meet every Tuesday at 6:15. Right, and we do a step and a tradition every week. Hell Has an Exit. All right, start out by telling you that in the literature, right, I found a couple of places where it mentions the word hell. One is on page 103, if anybody's carrying the basic text with them, of the fifth edition. Because, you know, now they got a six. And it's a real brief thing here. And it says, not only, and this is referring to, this is in the chapter that more will be revealed, right? And just this one line, it says, not only is this way of life better than the hell we lived, it is better than any other way that we have ever known. We have found a way out. So I want to get into, I don't want to get too biblical, religious, right? But from what I gathered, right, hell is not a good place, right? So I'm looking for a way out of hell, right? I don't want to call it Hades, right? I want to get into different levels of hell. Right, I don't want to get into fire and brimstones, right? But I'm going to talk about my personal hell, right? Now, everybody has their own personal hell, right? Something that you're trying to make an exit from, right? Because if it was all that, you wouldn't want to leave. So I'm going to go right into the literature, right? Because the literature is important for this addict, right? And that's how I work my recovery through the steps, traditions, and the concepts, right? Now, in the first step, right, it talks about the unmanageability of my life, right? So now I'm talking about the hell of waking up on the count, right? Boy, I used to hate that. But every time I would use, right, I would break out in handcuffs, right? And then I would end up on the count. Right? On the child. And as I kept going back, right, they stopped saying on the visit. So then I became like, you know, tired of this hell of waking up and not having any control over my life. You know, when I think about the hell that I was in, you know, I come from a community, right, in Harlem, right, that, lack of better term, it was drug infested, right? It used to be the drug capital of the world, right? In a 3-block radius, they had like about 700 addicts at any one time, right? So what was normal for Azeem growing up was I didn't see people going to work, right? Because everybody was on the corner hustling one thing or another, right? So this is, like I found out later when I started getting myself together, right, that I was from a deviant neighborhood that had, it was called like a deviant subculture, And a subculture is a culture that goes against the norms of the regular society. So it's a society within a society, you know, like, you ever heard it said, like, it's a hell of a place you live at? Right? So this is where I was at. 400, 500, 600, 700 addicts, right? Everywhere, right? So, like, you know, I got to be perfectly honest with you, right? Because coming up, the addicts or the dope fiends told me that it wasn't all right to use, right? Because I was a young guy and I was using, you know, like I picked up in 1956, right? And I want to say this and I want to be real clear, right? I used through 5 decades. Using through 5 decades is not that I used for 50 years, right? For the mathematicians, right? I picked up in 56, so I used through the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, because I got clean in 96. So I used through 5 decades. So I know how to use real good, right? When I started using, right, dope was 50 cent a cat, right? And they sold these things, it was called Bombitas, that was like a cocaine liquid that would stimulate you, right? So basically, that's where I'm from, all right? And it was a living hell, right? But that's enough about using. It really is. It's just that simple. So I'm going to talk to you about exiting out of hell, right? My process. I love my process in getting out of hell, right? It started, I was in a detox. I'm not going to name the detox because I'm not endorsing that particular detox because you can get clean anywhere you go. You ain't got to go to the detox Azim went to get clean. But in this detox, y'all came, right? And there's this little short lady, she came, she said, this is an H&I presentation that's being put on by Manhattan area, right? For those of y'all who can't make regular meetings on the outside. And then it dawned on me that I was again on the count. But she got my attention, right? And then y'all, you know, y'all talk about repetition. A couple of days later, a brother came up there. A couple of days later, another brother came up there. And this guy really got to me. He said, because he was talking to me, right? He said, Azim, when you get out this detox, go to a meeting, raise your hand, right? And let them know you just got out of detox. He said, man, they're going to clap for you. They're going to cheer you on. They're going to welcome you to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and tell them I sent you. And I looked at this brother. I said, all right. I'm going to take him up on this. So I made it to a meeting. I raised my hand. I said I was an addict. I just got out of detox. And y'all clapped. And said, back then, they was like picking up tables and slamming the tables, man. I mean, it was so much noise, man. You know, I thought I was a celebrity or something. You know? So I'm standing there. And then y'all started feeding me all this information about get a sponsor, right? So, you know, like, not knowing what a sponsor was, not knowing what a sponsor did, right? Really not trusting y'all, because, you know, I came into the meeting, y'all said y'all would love me until I learned to love myself. I said, man, well, what are they talking about? They don't even know me, right? So in this process, right, at these meetings in the beginning that I went to, I got phone numbers, right? So now, you know, I stopped using, I'm not using, I got a couple of days clean, right? I made this meeting, it was in the basement on 129th Street and Convent Avenue. You know, it became one of my favorite meetings, but the first time I went there, I was scared to death. Because there's this long, long ramp that you got to walk down, right? And you walk down that ramp, right?
and there's darkness in front of you. Laundry machines to the left. Who knows what's on the right? Right? And I'm looking in, I'm peeping in. And I'm one of them guys that I'm not gonna tell you that I'm the biggest pet lover. Like, you know, I'll put up with pets, but I'm not a, you know, anything you gotta feed, man, it ain't for us, ain't. So I said, you know, there might be dogs back there, right? And where I'm from, the dogs in the basements are mean. They bite, right? So I said, man, I'm not going back there into the darkness, right? So, I'm getting out of here, right? So, you know, I don't know what y'all did in the detox, but when I was in detox, what we used to do, when they used to bring up the food, right, we used to talk about, like, where they had the big bags, the fat bottles, right? And you know, crack bottles was $2 and $3 then, right? They had a place you could stick your stem in a hole and get a hit for a dollar, right? So, like, I mean, it was just a little easier to use because it was just a whole lot cheaper. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I got a bright idea coming out that basement, right? I said, well, I know where to go because we had discussed it in the detox. And I'm coming up the ramp twice as fast as I went down there. Because I walked down there slow, but I was literally running out of there, right? And at the top of the heap, right, there was a brother, man. I'll never forget this brother. He saved my life. He said, yo, brother, you looking for the meeting? And I looked at him. I looked in back of me. There was nobody in back of me, so he had to be talking to me. And I still said, who, me? He said, yeah, you, man. Are you looking for the meeting? And I said, yeah, I'm looking for the meeting. And he gave me a hug. And you know, there's something like, you know, like I done became addicted to hugs. I'm a hugger, hubbable type of guy, right? And the hugs really do something for me, right? Because when he gave me this hug, man, like, it kind of like the urge was lifted at that moment to use. Like he just held me there, right? I mean, the impact of that hug, right? And I was all right. And he showed me there was this big sign. It says N.A. And I looked at the sign. I couldn't believe I missed the sign. It would have been a snake. It would have bit me a couple of times. Right? So he walked me down to the meeting. Right? And I went inside, and I got some more phone numbers. And, you know, 3-4 days passed by. It was a Sunday morning. You know, I'm talking about I was all right. I was watching Superman, right? Superman was fighting Darkseid, right? And all of a sudden, just like that, I felt like using, right? So I don't know if you ever been in a position where you felt like using, but you didn't really want to use. You know, like the Darkseid was telling me, man, you can pick up, you got money in your pocket. But the little bit of recovery I had, I said, man, you ain't got to use, man. Call somebody. So I whipped out my meeting list. And the first number I called was disconnected. And boy, was I pissed with y'all. Because it felt just like when somebody gave me that dummy number to the fire station when I asked, look, can I have your number? She said, yeah, here it is. And I called the fire station. I said, damn. So I called the next number. I call another number, right? So I had like about 7 numbers on this, right? So I'm just calling numbers. By the end, right, I'm saying, this is Azim. You met me in a meeting. I feel like using. And this is my number. And I hung up the phone. So I didn't get through to none of y'all. So I already had like talk to myself about what I was going to do if y'all wasn't going to love me like y'all said y'all was going to love me until I learned to love myself, right, that I was going to go and do my thing. So I got dressed, and I was going out the door, right, and the phone rang. And I told you I picked up in 56, so I'm one of them older guys. I got Abbott and Costello in my mind, so I did one of them TV moves. Slowly I turned. Step by step. Answer it, don't answer it. Answer it, don't answer it. So I answered the phone, and it was another recovering addict. And it was the most serene voice. You know, the brother was just so calm. His serenity just came through the phone. He said, Azeem, I got your message. He said, grab a chair. And you know, I don't know about you, right? But at that moment, I was so confused, right? Right? Like, I wanted to use, I didn't want to use. I wanted to listen, right? So I said, here, hold up. I had a portable phone, but instead of taking the phone with me and sitting down relaxed in the living room, I put the phone down, ran to the kitchen and got a chair and dragged it back, right? And then sat there cramped up listening to this brother, right? And every few minutes he said, brother, how you feeling? He said, you ain't got to use. He said, man, it's only a feeling, it'll pass, right? He said, man, look, I'll come over there right now. And when he said that, the feeling of using just faded. Because I didn't tell him where I lived at. Now, true, right, it was a 212, but that could have been any place in Manhattan because back then, you know, Manhattan was 212. It's just that simple. Now 212 can be anywhere, right? So I was impressed. I said, damn, he's willing to come over. And he just kept talking. And then a few more minutes passed. He said, brother, he said, you all right? He said, man, I said, I'm all right. Yeah. He said, man, listen, I'm going to come and pick you up to take you to a meeting. Right? And I said, he said, you got your meeting list? And I pulled out my meeting list. I said, yeah, that's how I called you. I said, they got a meeting right here at 3:15. He said, man, he said, you want me to come and pick you up? I said, no, because I felt a whole lot better. I felt a little stronger. I said, I'll meet you at the meeting. So I got to tell you, man, the brother, he didn't show up at the meeting. Right? But I got to let you know that he did his job. Right? So I didn't use. Right? So now, I'm going to pull a concept out on y'all. Because the eighth concept talks about, right, the integrity and effectiveness of our communication is what makes the service structure, like, really operate, right? Something like that. I got it right here for all that want to know the exact what it says, but more or less that's what it's talking about is the effectiveness of our communication and the integrity, right, that we have when we do service. So the brother did service, right? He was sincere. Right? And it was effective. Right? And this is in the very beginning of my recovery. Right? So now I'm going to meetings with a different vigor. Right? I'm talking about like escaping, making an exit, making a detour from the life I was living. So what became important for this addict was to get a guide. Right? A sponsor. You know what a guide is? Right? Somebody that's going to guide me through the maze, right, that was my life. So I was blessed that I got a sponsor that he was, like, step-orientated, right? And so, like, I got busy right away. So now the steps took on a whole different meaning. Of course, I read the steps when I was in detox, right? And I ran up on my sponsor and I told him, I said, I must have had like about 90 days. I said, look, I bought the four-step workshop guide thing, the yellow little pamphlet. I said, man, I'm ready to do a four-step. He looked at me. I looked at him. I said, yeah, I'm ready. I ain't scared. He said, Azeem, tell me something about unmanageability, about dereliction, degradation, obsession, compulsion. And I looked at him. I said, what are you talking about, Willis? He said, man, like, you know, I see that you're ready to do some work. He said, man, let's start with step one. So, like, you know, the steps, right, Everybody has their own individual path at working the steps, right? Two people can work the same step, and they're going to do it differently, right? A lot of times, right, we're going to work with the guidance of our sponsor. So my sponsor told me, he said, Azim, what I want you to do, right, he says, I want you to get the dictionary, and I want you to look up these definitions, right? And then I want you to write down what they mean for you. Dereliction, degradation, unmanageability, right? So I sat down, I started doing some work. And I said, well, you know, it was kind of difficult, right, until y'all explained to me what dereliction was, right? Because I sold drugs all my life, man. I knew I wasn't a derelict. So y'all told me that dereliction was a state of abandoning yourself. So I abandoned myself every time I drank something, sniffed something, shot something, sniffed something, right? Because I was destroying myself. He said, Azim, what is dereliction to you? So I was able to tell him, right, that I definitely had abandoned myself in the process of active addiction, that I was no longer confused, right? I was able to tell him, right, that my obsession, right, is that my mind, right, was a TV screen. And channel 2, channel 4, and channel 5 said use. Channel 7, 9, and 11, and 13 said use. Channel 41 and 47 said USA, and that means use, right? The only break I got was I started using before cable. So now I'm doing some step work, right? I'm looking at the unmanageability of my life, right? I'm making like a running out as fast as I can, right, out of the abyss so that I can get my life together. So then, you know, the hope that you get, the hope that I got, let me tell you. I went to a meeting and a brother was sharing, right? And he said, some of us come in here, literally crawl in the meetings, and we stick and stay, and we're driving the meetings. Some of us come in homeless, and we stick and stay, and we become homeowners, right? Some of us come in here, can't read and write, right? And we stick and stay, and we get GEDs to PhDs. That brother impressed me. So I talked to the brother after the meeting, and I said, man, can I do some of that? He said, man, you can do all of that and more, because if I can do it, you can do it. So I'm talking about starting to come to believe, right, that I can do something. And let me share with you. You know, I guess that you know, because I got a letter from the federal government, you know, that comes in that green and white envelope, right? I don't know if anybody else got one of these letters. Right? And they tell you that if you was to retire right now, you would get zilch, because that's what they told me, right? So I said, why are they dissing me? I know I ain't work. So now I got an attitude, and I take the letter to a meeting, because y'all told me I could talk about anything that was bothering me, and that was bothering me because the government was dissing the kid. So I'm crying to a more experienced member, and they looked at me in my eye and said, Azim, you should be glad you got the letter. And I looked at them like they had three heads, not two. What are you talking about? So, Azim, it's real simple. That if you ever want to retire and get some money, now you know what you got to do. So now you can start getting busy. So a more experienced member like you ease my frustration, right, got me out my head and calmed me down and gave me a realistic goal that maybe I should get a job. So, like, I'm slowly coming out of this condition, right? And things is getting a little better, right? And it was a process, right? I'm talking about, like, turning it over. You know, I love the literature. And the Just for the Day, right? On page 13, it says that we surrender to win. And it says, by surrendering, we gain a power far greater than we can ever imagine. So now the importance of developing my faith in a higher power other than me became a reality. And I started believing. As I saw the miracles, you know, because I'm going to tell you, like, you know, not using was a miracle. Because I'm talking about, like, you know, always wanting to be high. I'm talking about the confusion, right, of thinking that there was such a thing as a good bag of dope. Man, that, you know, you got to get into recovery to think that that's a crazy thought. Because I used to really feel that way. I mean, the better the poison, right? And that's why I love the literature. Because the literature says, well, would you run up to somebody and ask for a fatal heart attack? And I'm the guy that would. Because I remember my man had a heart attack. They called the paramedics. They was taking him away. And I ran. I said, man, what color top was that? In the process of becoming grateful, you know, because I'm going to tell you, like, look, I had a physical addiction. The first time I was sick, somebody had to tell me, right? Because I remember I was sniffing that nonsense, going to play ball. One day I was on the court and I wasn't feeling it. My nose was running. I was seeing 2 and 3 baskets. And the man said, yo, man, what's wrong with you, man? You sick or something, man? You sniffing that doogie? He said, man, you look like you need a bag, man. He said, man, you got a chippy. That's what they called it in the beginning. And as soon as I sniffed that bag, man, I was hitting threes before they had threes. So we all know about the progression, right? And it just became chaotic, right? So living in hell was chaotic, right? And because I didn't want to be sick, I would go to any means necessary, right, to keep from becoming into a state of withdrawal. And you know, withdrawal is all right today. My little daughter says, Daddy, you ain't got no money, go to the bank and withdraw. All the time. But it wasn't all right when I was active. So, you know, look, coming out of hell with the help of a sponsor that's guiding me through this process, I mean, actually doing some work, right, believing that the majority of addicts have my best interests at heart, right? Because this is a caring and loving fellowship, right? So this is a program, like, look, you don't have to wait to have a fatal heart attack. You don't got to wait to OD. You don't got to get locked up. That's why, you know, when I read that, it was some good reading for me. I wish I would have read that before I went in, right? That you ain't got to go to jail. Like, you can recover on the outside. You know, you don't gotta wait to hit rock bottom. Look, the process of recovery is real simple. You get a guide, you do the work, you do service, right? And you commit, because I'm committed to my recovery, right? as a direct result of listening or taking the suggestions that y'all have given me, right, I was able to obtain a GED, a bachelor's, a master's, a KSAT, right? Because y'all told me it was obtainable as long as I did the work, right? In fact, you know what? I've been employed in the same job for like 7 years. That's a miracle. And sometimes I can't stand that job, but they pay the bills, right? So you know, like I'm not living from moment to moment. You know, look, this is a real intense topic, man, because, you know, sometimes hell could be financial. You know, I got like 2 minutes. I just want to touch on financial hell right quick. You know, I was at a convention in New Jersey, and the sister shared, and she blew me away, right? Because when you start going to school, they just throw credit cards at you, right? And being the addict that I am, obsessed and compulsive, I just started gathering them in, right? So I'm walking around with like 10 different credit cards, right? And you know, I have one of them wallets that you open it up and they all go down. One of them. And this sister said, "Wow, you must be making $100,000 a year with all them credit cards." And I said, "I wish." She said, "Why you got so many cards?" She said, "Do you use them?" Well, I wasn't even using all them cards, right? But the obsession, just the thought of having them, right? So the sister shared with me like some of her story, and she said, "Look, you can become obsessed with other things than drugs," right? She said, "It took me a little while, right? But I had obsession with shoes and boots," right? And she told me, she said she had like about 500 pair of shoes and 500 pair of boots, right? But only one pair of feet. She said that you don't gotta wait until it happens to you to stop. And that's the blessing of the program of Narcotics Anonymous for me, right? That when people share their experience, strength, and hope, a lot of times they're saying to Azim, "This is what happened to me. I survived it without using," right? But you ain't gotta go through that if you recognize the sign. Because it's real. And so, you know, in closing, you know, I want to thank all the predecessors for keeping the doors open. And this is like the 26th convention. You know, I just think that's awesome. Let's give a round for that. You know, again, I'm from Manhattan area, and we're working on our first convention. Got to start somewhere. And I really hope that y'all all make it up there. It's in Hudson Valley, and they got a lot of information floating around from people that's involved with the committees. And with that, I'm an addict in the process of recovery. Name Azim. Thank you for letting me share.